This week we study the sayings of the wise from Proverbs 22:17 through 24:34. For the past few months we've been studying the Proverbs of Solomon, which are recorded in two courses. These sayings of the wise are between those two courses of Proverbs. Here our author, probably also Solomon, gives us what he calls 30 wise sayings, though the number it seems to me is actually either 28 or 33, depending on what we count. So perhaps the number is rounded, or maybe I'm not a great counter. I've saved these sayings for the end of our discussion of chapters 10 through 29 because they make a generally good summation of the other things we have read here before. Your passage for consideration then is Proverbs 22:17 through 24:34, and if you have not read it yet, I recommend that you pause and do so now. First, how many sayings of the wise do we have here? Proverbs 22:20 says, "Have I not written for you 30 sayings of counsel and knowledge?" It's a very good question. Following that verse, starting in verse 22, there is a list of what appears to me to be 28 sayings. Usually these are in two-verse-long couplets. For that reason, I am inclined to say that the 30 sayings are a round number. It is possible, though, that I've divided the verses up wrong and that something I count as one saying is actually intended as two. That could bring the total to exactly 30. This is all further complicated by chapter 24:23, which says, "These also are sayings of the wise." That leads me to believe that this is intended as a second list. This second list is much shorter. So do we have two lists, or is this just one list? If it is all intended as one long list, then I would say that there are more than 30 sayings. I count 33. But then, maybe again, I've divided it up wrong. If we combined some of these along the way, we could have exactly 30. So combining lists, or not combining them, combining sayings, or dividing them further, round numbers, or whatever the case may be, somehow we've got either about or exactly 30. The first list opens with an introduction in chapter 22, verses 17 through 21. The introduction urges us to listen to wisdom and to apply our hearts to it. We are told here that if we will listen to wisdom and learn it, even memorizing it so that it is ready on our lips, then this will be pleasant for us. Why will it be pleasant? It will be pleasant because in doing them we will demonstrate our trust in the Lord and we will receive His blessings. So then we have 30 sayings of the wise. If we know them, we will know justice and truth, and we will give a good answer. So then without further ado, on to the sayings. Number 1. Do not rob the poor because he is poor, or crush the afflicted at the gate, for the Lord will plead their cause, and rob of life those who rob them. This fits very nicely with our messages about both righteousness and wealth. Obviously, robbing people is unrighteous. God sees that, and He responds. Wisdom teaches us that we should show compassion for the poor. Certainly, we should not take advantage of them. Number 2. Make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare. We had a message about temperament a few weeks ago, and this fits well with that. There we determined that anger itself is not wrong, but that being quick to anger and being overly angry is. This is what it would mean to be a person who is given to anger, or to be a person who is wrathful. So don't get angry over the small stuff, and don't get so angry that you commit sin, and don't hang around people who do. Number 3. Be not one of those who gives pledges, who put up security for debts. If you have nothing with which to pay, why should your bed be taken from under you? This again has been a recurring theme in the Proverbs, which we discussed in a message on making good use of wealth. When people borrow, they need some motivation to pay back. If you get in the middle and take that motivation away, then they won't pay, and you'll be in a lurch. Number 4. Do not move the ancient landmark that your fathers have set. Again, this is covered under righteousness. The moral law forbids moving a boundary stone because that represents stealing someone's property. Deuteronomy 27:17 says, "Cursed be anyone who moves his neighbor's landmark." This one is similar to number 10, which we'll consider shortly. Number 5. Do you see a man skillful in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before obscure men. In our discussion of wealth, we learned that wealth is produced by good work. Those who do great work tend to grow great wealth, and they can attract the best customers. If you want to do well in life, learn to do good work. Number 6. When you sit down to eat with a ruler, observe carefully what is before you, and put a knife to your throat if you are given to appetite. Do not desire his delicacies, for they are deceptive food. This one is mysterious. Hyperbolically speaking, it says it is better to kill oneself than to eat too much at the ruler's table. But why? Perhaps eating too much shows weakness? You want to have influence with those in power, but if you eat too much, you look poor, and thus, as if you are without influence, maybe? Or maybe the food is representative of a favor. Taking the favor from a person with power might mean that you owe him something in return, and maybe you don't want to be indebted to him. Or maybe we're supposed to pair this with wise saying number 8, which cautions us not to eat a stingy man's food, since he'll hate us for it, whether he says so or not. Maybe Solomon just got tired of having so many people hanging around and eating everything. We've discussed previously that he had a huge administration and had to feed a lot of people in Jerusalem. See our message, Solomon's Administration, published January 22, 2023, for more on that. The passage doesn't give us much to go on, so I suppose we'll just have to take it for what it's worth. Don't eat too much at a powerful person's table. Number 7. Do not toil to acquire wealth. Be discerning enough to desist. When your eyes light on it, it is gone, for suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle toward heaven. Now that one I find quite interesting because it is a counterpoint to our previous discussion about sloth. Clearly a person should not be lazy, but then this proverb reminds us that he shouldn't work himself to death either. Life is about more than acquiring wealth, so do take some time to enjoy yourself. Number 8, perhaps intended to be paired with number 6. Do not eat the bread of a man who is stingy. Do not desire his delicacies, for he is like one who is inwardly calculating. Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you. You will vomit up the morsels that you have eaten and waste your pleasant words. Unfortunately, people tend toward dishonesty. They say nice things that they don't mean. Among those is, take all you want, when they really don't want you to take any. People shouldn't be that way, but if they are, then again, unfortunately, you will be burdened to figure that out, so as not to offend. Don't take too much from a person, even if he says you can have it. Number 9. Do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the good sense of your words. Well, I have certainly experienced this a time or two, or 10. Trying to reason with foolish people will usually just get you into trouble. It is better to just get away from them than it is to try and fix them. The trouble, of course, is that if nothing is done to fix a fool, then he'll just keep on being foolish, which can be a problem for everyone. And of course, some people don't show their foolishness until an attempt is made at talking to them, so they can't be entirely avoided. So try to find a balance here, but generally, being around fools and trying to straighten them out will get you hurt in the end. Number 10. Do not move an ancient landmark or enter the fields of the fatherless, for their Redeemer is strong. He will plead their cause against you. This one mirrors number 4, except that it mentions the fatherless, the most helpless people, and invokes their Redeemer who will avenge them. This perhaps is a reference to God as Redeemer, or it may intend the literal kinsman Redeemer after whom God has taken the title. In ancient times, a family would have a person who was the wealthiest and most powerful. The responsibility of defending members of the family, particularly orphans, widows, and such, would fall to him. So stealing from orphans would be a bad idea, because having no father doesn't mean that no one cares about them. Number 11. Apply your heart to instruction and your ear to words of knowledge. This fits well with our message, Wisdom About Wisdom. If you want to learn wisdom, the first step is to applying yourself to studying it. Number 12. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die. If you strike him with the rod, you will save his soul from Sheol. We discussed discipline when we considered the family, and there we noted that spanking is the method which the scriptures regularly suggest. We should be clear, though, that striking a child with a rod very well can kill him, so don't hit anyone in the head or any vital organs or anything like that. Don't beat people too hard or with something too hard. But taking a paddle to a kid's behind is good for him when he deserves it, so do that. Number 13. My son, if your heart is wise, my heart too will be glad. My inmost being will exult when your lips speak what is right. Let not your heart envy sinners, but continue in the fear of the Lord all the day. Surely there is a future, and your hope will not be cut off. As the book of Proverbs attests, wisdom is good, and we should be glad to be around wise people. If we will follow God in patient wisdom, good things will happen for us. Number 14. Hear, my son, and be wise, and direct your heart in the way. Be not among drunkards or among gluttonous eaters of meat, for the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and slumber will clothe them with rags. This one speaks to those ideas expressed in our message, The Wisdom of Work. When we work, we create wealth, and the world is wealthier. When we consume, as in large portions of meat and drink, the wealth is destroyed and we become poorer. Ideally, none of us should be lazy. We should all work and create more wealth than we consume. If we do that, then we will become rich. Alternatively, if we spend our time sleeping and eating and drinking but not working, then we will become poor. Number 15. Listen to your father who gave you life, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy truth and do not sell it. Buy wisdom, instruction, and understanding. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice. He who fathers a wise son will be glad in him. Let your father and mother be glad. Let her who bore you rejoice. Indeed, it is good for you to listen to your parents. If nothing else, they have some wisdom that comes from having lived longer than you and having had experiences that you have not had. If you apply their wisdom, they will be proud of that. Number 16. My son, give me your heart, and let your eyes observe my ways, for a prostitute is a deep pit, an adulteress is a narrow well. She lies in wait like a robber and increases the traitors among mankind. Sexual activity outside of marriage is forbidden in the Bible. We've discussed that many times. It is both a violation of the moral law and among the topics which is most covered here in Proverbs. Whether it is fornication, that is, sex with an unmarried woman, who by that act becomes a prostitute, or adultery, that is, sex with a married woman, sex outside of marriage is unwise. We've been over the many reasons, but the one given here is that sexual immorality increases the traitors among mankind. Your neighbors won't like you much if you take their wives or sisters or mothers or daughters or future wives, so don't do it. Number 17. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has strife? Who has complaining? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who tarry long over wine, those who go to try mixed wine. Do not look at wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup and goes down smoothly. In the end, it bites like a serpent and stings like an adder. Your eyes will see strange things and your heart utter perverse things. You will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, like one who lies on the top of a mast. They struck me, you will say, but I was not hurt. They beat me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake? I must have another drink. I have not, in the course of teaching Proverbs, said anything much about drinking. That is because the book says only a little about it, and most of what it says is right here, so I've saved discussion on the topic for now. I will open my discourse on the topic by saying that drinking alcohol is not condemned outright as unlawful in the Bible. There is no penalty for drinking alcohol which we ought to inflict upon someone who does it. I don't think drinking alcohol should be illegal, or that we should force people not to drink. However, it is clear here and elsewhere that drinking is very unwise, and I strongly urge my fellow Christians and society in general to have the wisdom not to produce alcohol, not to sell alcohol, and not to use alcohol. I am strongly opposed to drinking and drug use. In fact, I have never drank alcohol or smoked anything or used any drug without a prescription. Even when I've been prescribed things, I'm prone not to take them. Part of the reason for that is my personal experience. Two of my grandparents, one on either side, were alcoholics, and that made life miserable for my family. In the end, my maternal grandfather couldn't live with himself, and he committed suicide. But I've seen more harms than that. When I was a small child, I was in a very serious car accident that occurred when a drunk driver struck my mother's vehicle. Thankfully, everyone came out all right, but it could have ended much differently. Through the years, I've known people who died of drug overdoses, who left their children orphans and their spouses widows. I've known people who ruined their lives by using drugs and ending up behind bars. I've known people who destroyed their brains and their futures with too many drugs, people who raped or were raped, people who injured and permanently disfigured themselves, and so forth. Recreational drug use, including alcohol use, is stupid. It is expensive. It is wasteful. It is deleterious to your health. It will cause you to do things that you will regret, and it is addictive. A wise person weighs the risks and the rewards and chooses the best course of action. The risks of using alcohol or other drugs is extremely high. The cost, in the worst cases, is that it will cost you much or even everything, and the odds of suffering such losses are also fairly high. And the scriptures here tell us the cost of using drugs like alcohol. Woe, sorrow, strife, complaining, wounds, red eyes, a bite like that of a serpent. To take such a high risk, there must be some high reward, right? But when I ask people, what is good about drinking alcohol, the only positive responses I get are, it makes me feel good, or my friends are doing it and I want to be sociable. Those are pretty terrible rewards for such a high cost. As we will see in our next point, number 18, being around the wicked is not wise, and as we saw in number 14, the drunkards make bad companions. So if you're drinking to be liked by people, then you're looking for the approval of the wrong people. That's no excuse to drink. And if you think it makes you feel good, then maybe you should consider how bad it will make you feel when it gets out of control. In my mind, drinking is a very selfish activity. Even if your drinking is under control, when you buy alcohol, you are supporting an industry to push a product that will put other people out of control. And if you drink, you set an example for others that drinking is acceptable behavior. But that person who sees your example might not have the same self-control that you have, and so you will have led your brother astray. Leading your brother astray and potentially destroying his life and the lives of others just so that you can feel a little buzzed is selfish and foolish. Proverbs tells us here, "Do not look at wine when it is red. This is wisdom and not law, but let me warn you, drinking alcohol or recreationally using any drug is foolish. When you use them, you will dull your senses. Your seeing and hearing and thinking will become broken. Your ability to act normally will be broken. You will reel back and forth, unable to walk straight, like a man on top of the mast of a rocking ship. You'll take a beating and not even know it. And if you use it too much, you'll end up addicted to it, so that this becomes a regular part of your life. You will wake up from being drunk, looking for another drink. This is bad for you. Please don't do it." There are other references to alcohol made in Proverbs, but I have reserved these for today since this is the longest passage on the topic. Proverbs 20:1 says, "Wine is a mocker, strong drink a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise." Proverbs 31:4-6 says, "It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, or for rulers to take strong drink, lest they drink and forget what has been decreed and pervert the rights of all the afflicted. Give strong drink to the one who is perishing, and wine to those in bitter distress." So alcohol will lead you astray. It will make you forget. It will make you make bad decisions. It is bad. You should not use it. If you want to be a leader, this passage mentions a king, but its advice is good for any leader, whether in an elected office or in the church or in a business, then you should not use alcohol, because it won't help you. More could be said about alcohol throughout the scriptures. If you're looking for a more thorough treatment outside of Proverbs, you could listen to our message, Lot and His Daughters, published August 14th of 2016. Moving on to number 18. Be not envious of evil men, nor desire to be with them. Often it will seem like wicked people are having a lot of fun. They'll be partying and drinking and fornicating and so forth. But you don't want to have that kind of fun. And when they get out of that stage of their lives, which they will regret, then they'll move on to doing unethical things to make money, and then while you're using what you have to do, which is in the best interest of society, like, say, helping the poor or funding missions, they'll be taking yet another vacation on money they don't deserve. They'll tell lies to boost their reputation and to tear down yours. So the wicked will often get good things for themselves in life at the expense of the good of the whole, while you, as a believer, will be making endless personal sacrifices for the best interests of everyone. That can be draining, but you should not envy them and the enjoyment that they have now. In the end, the good that they are getting is not as satisfying as the good that you are doing, and in the end, you will be rewarded for your good work while they have received all of their rewards now. You might be tempted to be part of the crowd and to get the benefits that the crowd bestows. Don't be tempted that way. Number 19. By wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. By knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. This, again, like number 5, points to the benefit of performing valuable work, which we discussed in our message, The Wisdom of Work. The Proverbs consistently oppose laziness. If you find worthwhile work to do and you devote yourself to doing it, you will build wealth. Working is a wise behavior, and if you do it, you can build a good house for yourself. Number 20. A wise man is full of strength, and a man of knowledge enhances his might. For by wise guidance you can wage your war, and in abundance of counselors there is victory. Indeed, it is wise to work and become wealthy. Wealth is used in making weapons and defenses. Wise men make good strategies which are critical to winning a war, and with many people filling the gaps in each other's knowledge, there can be much wisdom. Wisdom, I would argue, is more critical to winning a war than is strength. Wisdom can give you strength, but strength doesn't give you wisdom. Of course, whether or not you are winning a war, having good counsel is helpful in many endeavors, so if you have it available, you should seek it out. That is part of humility, listening to what others have to say. Number 21. Wisdom is too high for a fool. In the gate, he does not open his mouth. The city gate was a common meeting place in ancient times, particularly for the town elders. It was the place for discussing law and resolving social issues and so forth. The fool wouldn't be one to hang around there. Number 22. Whoever plans to do evil will be called a schemer. The devising of folly is sin, and the scoffer is an abomination to mankind. The scoffer, as we said in our message, The Wisdom of Humility, is the person who will not listen to wisdom. Such a person as that will choose to do evil. Worse, though, than a person who does evil is a person who premeditates to do evil. So don't be one of those people. Find ways to do good. Number 23. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. Rescue those who are being taken away to death. Hold back those who are stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, "Behold, we did not know this," does not he who weighs the heart perceive it? Does not he who keeps watch over your soul know it? And will he not repay man according to his work? This proverb speaks to negligence, to the sin of omission. As believers, we have a duty to defend our Christian brothers both from those who would harm them and from them when they would harm themselves. We have a duty to confront sin where we find it, and if necessary, to fight against it. When such a need arises, if we fail to help our brothers in that time of need, then we show ourselves to be of little strength. We cannot ignore wrongdoing when we see it. If we turn a blind eye and pretend that it is none of our business, God will see our negligence. God helps us in our time of need, and if we neglect our brothers and leave them to be harmed, then we should expect for God to repay us by neglecting us in our time of need. So don't be negligent. Help your brothers. Confront sin. Be strong. Number 24. My son, eat honey, for it is good, and the drippings of the honeycomb are sweet to your taste. Know that wisdom is such to your soul. If you find it, there will be a future, and your hope will not be cut off. Well, we have covered this many times. Wisdom is good, in this case, compared to the sweetness of honey. So, get wisdom. Number 25. Lie not in wait as a wicked man against the dwelling of the righteous. Do no violence to his home, for the righteous falls 7 times and rises again, but the wicked stumble in times of calamity. As we have noted, it is wise to be righteous. That includes not attacking and robbing innocent people. Exodus 22:2, which carries a prohibition against breaking in to steal, is instructive on the matter. It is wicked to do such wrongs to righteous people. It is also foolish, because righteous people are hard to beat. They work hard, they accumulate wealth, their good character gains them social support, they build strong families, and so forth. So a righteous person is the worst person to rob, because if you knock him down, he'll get right back up and fight you until he's taken you down. So don't be wicked, and especially don't be wicked to the righteous. Be righteous instead. Number 26. Do not rejoice when your enemy falls, and let not your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it and be displeased and turn away his anger from him. Ideally, we should not wish harm on anyone. What we want is for every human to achieve his full potential for the good of all of us. When people are productive, we all benefit from living in a more productive world. If someone is our enemy, he should be our enemy because he does some moral wrong. And rather than wanting him to fall for that wrong, we should want him to turn from the wrong and do right. That is what is best for him and what is best for everyone else. God is displeased when we celebrate harm coming to others, and this proverb suggests that God will stop harming our enemies if we celebrate the harm that comes to them. Now that's a little ironic. If you want God to harm your enemies, then you must want God not to harm them so that he will. But then by the time you legitimately want them not to be harmed, then they will be harmed and you'll be disappointed by the outcome. It just seems like a losing prospect no matter what you want. Regardless, you shouldn't wish for harm to people. Number 27. Fret not yourself because of evildoers, and be not envious of the wicked, for the evil man has no future, the lamp of the wicked will be put out. This one pairs nicely with number 18, which told us not to envy evil men. Here we get an explanation as to why. Their wickedness is self-defeating, they destroy themselves, and so they have no future. You shouldn't want to be like that. You also shouldn't be afraid of them, because they cannot last. Number 28. My son, fear the Lord and the king, and do not join with those who do otherwise, for disaster will arise suddenly from them, and who knows the ruin that will come from them both. As we discussed in our message on the wisdom of kings and courts, the king has power. Whether you like it or not, you're going to have to learn to get along with him. Those who don't will be ruined. In chapter 24, verse 23, we have the break, which tells us, these also are sayings of the wise, seemingly separating two distinct lists. I'm going to continue my numbering from the previous list, though, for continuity's sake. Number 29. Partiality in judging is not good. Whoever says to the wicked, you are in the right, will be cursed by peoples, abhorred by nations. But those who rebuke the wicked will have delight, and a good blessing will come upon them. As also discussed in the message on courts and kings, wise judges judge impartially. The people are not stupid. They know when they are being mistreated and when right is being subverted. Those who judge wrongly will eventually lose the faith of their people and will be hated for it. To the contrary, people generally like and support sound judgment. Number 30. Whoever gives an honest answer kisses the lips. As we discussed in our message on honesty, flattering people with lies is harmful in the end. A real friend tells the truth. Number 31. Prepare your work outside. Get everything ready for yourself in the field, and after that, build your house. This is one that has stuck with me over the years, and one that I think many modern people would do well to learn. In past times, agricultural work was most of the work, and so the point of this proverb is that people need to do their work first, and then have their rewards, a nice house, later. If you waste your resources building the house, but then don't put your effort into the field, then you won't have enough food and you'll starve. The key is to do the work and store the necessary resources and then to prepare for your comforts. Translating that to modern life, you need to work hard and you need to live within your means. You don't need to buy yourself a giant house on a mortgage and live in debt just hoping that you'll be able to work enough to pay it off someday. The wise way to live is to focus yourself on getting an income first and to delay your gratification until you can afford it. Number 32. Be not a witness against your neighbor without cause, and do not deceive with your lips. Do not say, I will do to him as he has done to me. I will pay back the man for what he has done. False accusations are extremely harmful. I've experienced that myself, and I'm sure many others have as well. It can be tempting when someone says something untrue about you to go out and say something untrue about that other person. Well, don't. Two wrongs don't make a right. False accusations undermine the entire system of justice, and your character for honesty is more important than harming some liar. So tell the truth. Number 33. I passed by the field of a sluggard, by the vineyard of a man lacking sense, and behold, it was all overgrown with thorns. The ground was covered with nettles, and its stone wall was broken down. Then I saw and considered it. I looked and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed man. Laziness is one of the most commonly addressed topics in the Proverbs and also in the sayings of the wise. If you don't work, then the things that you have will deteriorate. You will consume your wealth and you will have less. If you work, then you can maintain what you have and gain more. If you want to be poor, be lazy. If you want to be rich, get to work. I note the words a little sleep, a little slumber. They imply to me that it doesn't take much slacking off to fall behind. So keep it moving. Next time you want to take a nap or sleep in, find something productive to do. These then are the 30-ish sayings of the wise. They cover a wide range of topics that do a pretty good job of summarizing what we've read in the Proverbs so far. In summary, they tell us to be righteous and not wicked, which includes being honest, not oppressing the poor, not robbing, not moving landmarks, not committing sexual immorality, and so forth. To seek out wisdom and be wise instead of foolish, which includes not drinking, not putting up security for a stranger, not making friends with angry fools, and not envying their ways. To work hard that we might gain wealth, but not so hard that our lives become overwhelmed with toil, and to live within our means. To humbly accept the wise counsel of others. To wish well for everyone. To judge impartially and to try and get along with the king. To do our duty to confront sin and to defend the innocent, to honor and obey our parents and to discipline our children, and to not take the food of a stingy man. In general, that's a pretty good representation of things we've read elsewhere. Next week, having concluded 17 weeks of study, we will move out of Proverbs 10 through 29.
For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.